Station number 7465.
Major Banner, tape 4. Right, could you now tell me about your experience with the 67th Field Ambulance? We're very interested to hear as much as you can possibly remember. What did you feel, first of all, when you were told that you were actually going to go up to the front with this field ambulance?
I was very pleased. I'd been down at the base hospital, and when I joined the army in the first place, I hadn't thought I'd be fixed at a hospital. And so I was very glad to get the chance of going up the line to see something, to do a bit. Well, I think that about six of us who went up from the hospital up to join the field ambulance, we went up by train as far as we could, and then from there we marched or walked or something. I think they sent a runner to collect us. We marched off. We had to spend the night in the open. Now, out there, because of mosquitoes, we had to a mosquito net, things like that. Well, we just hadn't got them in the open. We just had to lie down in the open. I could feel myself being bitten all over, and I thought, well, I'm getting the malaria after this, but I didn't. It was all right. Anyway, the next morning we went on and joined the ambulance and just fitted in and did various jobs, preparing in general, getting stretchers along from depots, ready for the big attack which took place. And then when it did start, the big job I remember being on was a runner came along to report that three men were lying wounded right out in no man's land, and they needed three stretchers and parties. Well, somebody collected us. I was one of the six. We went up with three stretchers. We went through some trench at the side of Jackson's Ravine, which I'd not heard of before then, but that was right on the front. It was in no man's land. We were one side, the Bulgars were the other, and then beyond that was a hill, Grand Corone, which was their big strong point, a real fortress up there. If they could look down and see us and fire on our lines, we couldn't see them because it's so well fortified, natural rocks and so on. Well, we got along through Jackson's Ravine, and then getting further over into the open, we suddenly got shelled. Then, on that, we realised what it was. Seeing six people in a bunch meant attention. That's where they sent some shells over to disperse us. If we did disperse, I don't know what happened to the other four, but the one man with me, I remember his name was Burden. He stayed with me, and we got our stretcher. We went on with a runner who showed us where to go. And I say, the other people, I don't know what happened to at all. They scattered. They might have found other wounded. I just don't know. Anyway, we went on, and this the runner showed us in the open where the two men, one was the colonel, who'd been shot, and the other man, I didn't know what about him at the time. I don't know if it was the third man, but there's only those two I could see. The wounded man, I think, was unconscious. I could see he'd got a badly shot up thigh, and that's where I started on him. I got his rifle to make into a rifle splint. And while we're doing that, I noticed, as I moved, I trod on somewhere, and I said, "Oh, sorry," something like that. He didn't reply, so I looked around. I found he was the other man. He had been shot. He got a bullet wound here, and his brain's sticking out of the back of his head. So I knew he was finished, and we couldn't do anything about him. Well, that showed we were right within rifle range of the Bulgars. They could see us. We couldn't see them, but they could see us, and we were within rifle range. But anyway, they didn't shoot us, though. They could see we were only with a stretcher and not armed, and so they left us alone, and we brought the man back. But I don't know what happened to the other four. The Burden too, I got him back. He seemed to be rather dithery, and I don't know what happened to him, but he was very broken up after, he was very shaken after all that. And then soon after that I came across something. And when I'd been in the scouts, I'd learned a stretcher drill, a two-man, a four-man and a six-man drill. I knew all that. Well, in practice I found the difficulty was to find even a second man, because when another runner came in to say he found a wounded man in a gully, a Christmas Ravine it was called, which again I never heard of before, which was right in no man's land. I had a job to find another man to come with me, but I did grab another man. We went off with a stretcher. We found this man. He's lying in what was a brook, in effect, in this ravine. He's lying He's lying face down. He got a big wound in the back of his neck. I thought it doesn't look very good for his chances. Anyway, he put the stretcher down alongside, and he scrambled onto it. He wasn't so bad as we thought. Anyway, I think I put a dressing gown of some sort. It brought him back, and that was the end of that part.
Were you very frightened, having to go so far near the front? Were you frightened at all?
No, it was all excitement. If I'd been there for months, say, and had it day after day, I could have been. But even when I found I was up alongside this man, one being killed and one being wounded by a rifle fire from there, I didn't think, well, it might have been me. I just didn't think of it. And the same going into Christmas Ravine. I just helped to bring this man back, and although he'd been shot, it didn't apply to me. It wasn't my business.
Do you think the Turks would they have known that you were a stretcher bearer? You know,
they did when they saw two of us. They'd see with the stretcher, I suppose. But when they saw six of us, they didn't like that. But I thought it wasn't worthwhile sending a shell over just for two people, especially if we weren't armed.
Was it quite strenuous work, carrying these men back?
Yes, except that it was the first time I had to stretch a sling. The sling goes over the shoulders, and it takes the handles and takes some of the weight off the arms, and that made it far simpler. I've never seen slings either before or after, as far as I remember, but it made all the difference, though, having slings.
What were the stretchers made of?
Oh, just ordinary stretchers, the same as used now by the police and so on. Not the modern ones. I think now they're made of metal and have wheels and so on. But nothing like that, just plain wooden stretchers. Oh, I do remember one point. One man of the party, I think he was one of the normal people there, not the reinforcements. It was a very quiet bloke. I think he must have been henpecked when he was at home. He never said anything. He never smiled or any notice. I saw him one day cleaning a lot of lamps. He's all mucky with lamp rag cleaning and so on, but he didn't mind just going on doing his job without anybody at all. I didn't see him again until on this day when, coming back from bringing these two men in, I did see him carrying a stretcher with another party, again completely unconcerned with everything. Not for it in the slightest. It's just the same as I'd seen him before.
Can you remember any of the cases you picked up? Well, you know, some of the wounds very bad.
No, I can't remember in detail any more than those two. No? One time I remember we were more hanging about, I think, and some people came running back, French people. They'd had a bit of reverse, and I saw one Frenchman running, a lot of blood running from his leg, and I more or less pulled him out of the ranks and started to get my field dressing out. And I suddenly remembered, instead of using my field dressing, I used his own. I assumed that he had one the same as we did. I found he had one, and I put that on, and he went off. But he seemed rather disgusted because he'd been stopped from going back with all his pals. The only Frenchman I had met then.
And how long were you actually doing the stretcher bearing?
Well, that only occurred for about 4 or 5 days, because after a few days, the Bulgars were driven back. Although on the centre front, the Doiran horseshoe front, although that was the main push, it was not expected we should get through, because they were far stronger than we were, and the flanks were different. We'd got the Serbs and the Italians and French and so on helping us on the flanks. They're able to push forward, and as they pushed forward, that left the Bulgar centre opened at the rear, and so they pulled back. And when they went back, of course, then we could go over. We did go over. I remember I was one of the party that went over the battlefield exploring to see if anybody was still alive. There wasn't, and that's where I met the second bad smell, I say, after the first one I'd met in 1915 in Egypt.
What actually happened then? What happened then? You see, that's when you met the second bad smell.
Ah, yes. Well, there weren't any wounded. They'd all been killed. The whole field. I was the only man alive inside.
How many dead were there?
Oh, 20, 40, 50, you know, a big number. You know.
And would they have been British Allied troops?
Oh, our troops, yes. They've been shot within the last few days, but long enough to go black in the face and look in a mess. But again, I wasn't worried by it. I was about 20 by then, 19 or 20, and I could take without any qualms then.
Must have been very unpleasant in the heat, though, with flies about.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Was it an unpleasant sight?
Yes.
How quickly were they buried?
I don't know. We went on and left all that part because although the Bulgars had gone back, we followed up. And remember, we followed up with the ambulance and we seemed to get mixed up with the Derbyshire Yeomanry because at one stage they made a charge and then after a bit of a shelling and they came running back. They were deterred. And as we were at very close to one of our batteries, the battery came in for fire and we got that too, so we dispersed. I remember that.
Did you see any dead Turks as you went along?
Bulgars then.
Bulgars, yes.
Just one. Well, one I remember. One place, there's some Bulgars had been there but been driven back, I think. That's where I got this a German helmet, and which I brought back. Actually, when I got it, I used it as a bath. I stopped up the two air vents and used it to carry water because the stream was about a quarter of a mile away and we wanted to get a wash. And so that was my helmet. I claimed the first bath in it, and the next lot of the same water and so on.
How were the Bulgars regarded by the Allied troops, do you think? Did you respect the Bulgars as soldiers?
Well, I really can't say about that. They're just a name to me. I didn't meet any. Well, one or two prisoners of war, they were all right, but it didn't seem, I remember, any different from the Turks had been in 1915.
And how about the field ambulance when you took the wounded back? Well, was that well organised?
Yes, I think so. The main dressing station was in a dugout or a cave at the foot of Horseshoe Hill, which was a big natural hill, of course. If we'd got one side or one end of it, the other of it led up to Grand Coronet, which was the Bulgar post. And I think that seemed all right. The surgeons were working inside there, inside this dugout with doing operations and so on. I only went in once or twice to take people in or bring people out and so on, but that's all I can remember of it.
And what would have happened then? Would people have been taken from the field ambulance down to Salonika? What would the next stage of care have been?
I'm not quite sure. There should have been a casualty clearing station. I don't know what there was, though. As far as I know, they just went off by ambulance, but where they went to next, I don't know.
Would that have been motor ambulance or horse-drawn?
Both. I did see horse ones. Yes, I remember one case. I forget how it came about, but I know there was a mule, and I was leading him along, and there's a wounded man sitting on this mule, and I was directing or steering this mule down somewhere. That's only very vague. I'd have forgotten all about it until you just mentioned it.
What sort of fighting ground was it in Salonika when you were at the front for the 3 days? Was it very rough ground? Could you sort of describe the terrain?
In Salonika? In Salonika itself, of course, it was a city, rather knocked about, but just an old city, which was quite interesting. But where we were with the hospital, that was about 15 miles out in the hills. That was just fairly wild country. In one place, I remember, there was a a ravine or a gully leading somewhere, and as I went down it, it got underground in somewhere. I don't know if it was natural or not, but I went down. I got rather frightened when I got inside, because I'm rather claustrophobic. I don't like being shut in. And after I'd been down some distance, I gave it up and I came back, and I didn't go down there anymore. And I never knew what it was used for.
How about the terrain at the front when you went through the horseshoe? What sort of country was it?
Oh, that was very hilly. We were at Horseshoe Hill. Just in front, on the other side of Jackson's Ravine, was what had been the village of Adultzeli. Now, that had been a village before the Balkan Wars, but it had been knocked about in the First and the Second Balkan Wars, and there were really only a few stones left. It wasn't a village at all, but there certainly had been fighting there. There were wounded there and a lot of dead about there. But there wasn't any fighting at the moment when I was up there. That had taken place a bit earlier.
So after your experience with the field ambulance, did you have to go back to the hospital and work?
Yes. You know, after they'd finished, well, oh no, when we finished now, after the bodies were pushed back, we advanced to follow them up, and then when we got over the frontier into Yugoslavia, as it is now, it was then to Serbia. When we got up there, then the Bulgars gave in altogether, and then we were switched over to go against the Turks. The war was still on with them. But again, after a day or two, they gave in also. And then we'd finished with that, and then the six of us came back down the line by train down to Salonika and joined in with the rest of the hospital. Well, then, on the November the 11th, there was a general armistice, as you know. Oh, I should say, before that, though, there had been an armistice with the Bulgars, and we were... Armistice with the Bulgars, that's right. And then we moved off to march towards Turkey. But after a few days, the Turks also gave in, and we came back. And then it was November the 11th, armistice day, when we practically didn't know anything at all. There wasn't any celebration. It was the end of the war. We should have been joyful and so on, but nobody took any notice, because it's quite an anticlimax. But just after that, though, I had my 21st birthday, I remember, on November the 24th. Well, then we went into camp, where we spent part of the winter. It was in snow, by the way, which was still intense. And then... sometime later, we were split up into various units. I think I went to the 23rd General Hospital. When I got there, I told one of the MOs that I was really an X-ray operator. He said he didn't know there were any spare men. He soon found a place where they needed somebody.
This was in Salonika still, was it?
Yes, they're back in Salonika now. Well, then... he said they were short of extra operators, as I thought, but on my own, the HS General CO wasn't a bit concerned about that. All he wanted was a maximum number of men. So then they did find me a post. It was at the 23rd General Hospital, which was, it was in Salonika, and there I went along. There was an MO in charge. He hadn't got any operator. I'd had been shut down till I got there. I was able to take on, and then I did commence my job, and I was able to do something worthwhile. Well, I got one or two people as learners, and then after a few weeks, the MO was due to be demobilised. He went off and left me in charge. Now, I was a full private, in charge of the X-ray department, and I was getting an extra 6 months a day for that. I was getting the ordinary shilling a day, and at about that time, or just before, they'd brought out extra penny a day for people who had been out at all. Well, I'd been out for 4 years, so I'd get in 1 4 months, plus 6 months, 1 10 months a day, and I was in charge of the X-ray department. Well, sometime later, it came to my turn to be demobilised. But because there's no MO, they wouldn't let me go. So I thought, oh, this won't do. So I got onto one or two of the brightest of the people, and I told them all I could, the tramps, or I was able to say that they could take over after me, and then I did get away, and I did get back to be demobilised.
Was it a big responsibility, being in charge of an X-ray department?
I think it was, but it wasn't regarded as anything, even though I was a private in charge. If they wanted to get a pass down to Southern Eagle for the day, if they got to come to me and get a pass signed, so normally people go, say, to an NCO, but I was in charge and they'd come to me.
You were going to say that one day you had an interesting case.
Oh, yes. One of the medical officers had brought in a Greek girl. I don't know who she was, but somebody of some consequence, judging, I believe she was anyway. She'd got some injury, accident to her foot to be x-rayed, and she was duly x-rayed, and people were very interested and so on. But the first I heard of it was when I got back from Salonika. I had half a day off and gone down to Salonika, and I'd missed it, all the fun of it.
Did you have much contact with the Greeks while you were there?
Well, only, I think, through the shopkeepers.
Did you get on well, the contacts that you had? Did you get on well with the people?
Oh,
were they
yes.
friendly
yes,
to the
Yes, they're
British?
All friendly, yes. The shopkeepers especially, of course, they wanted to sell things. And they could always be bought down. I remember I saw something, I'm not sure what it was, but it was on sale for 11 drachma. I said I'd give 5, and he got it down. He came down to 5. I got it in the end. But somebody with me was amazed, though, that they'd bargain in the clerk as much as that. And it did. I got it for my price. Yes, they were quite friendly.
Was it quite a pleasant place to be in Greece? Was it very pleasant, you know, with the climate and the atmosphere? Did you enjoy being there?
Yes. As far as I remember, there weren't any mosquitoes there were mosquitoes very upcountry, but not down in Salonika. No. I don't remember flies in Salonika either.
Was it pleasant countryside? Was it, you know, a pretty place to be? And did you have nice vegetables and fruits and things?
There's plenty of bushes growing... grapes and so on. I remember picking armfuls of grapes. But the countryside varied a lot over a few miles even. Some places were wild and rocky, others were civilised and so on. On the whole, it was rather poor. People weren't well-dressed or well-off. Of course, they're all the peasant type.
What was the water situation while you were there? Could you get plenty of fresh water?
I've no recollection of any trouble, so I suppose it was all right.
What would it have been like at the front? Would you have taken water carts up with you? You were saying your tin
yes.
helmet, you used to fill
yes.
it up.
In that case, yes. For water. Yes, there were places where, I don't know how they did get water, but it was probably taken up by water carts. That's water... tanks on wheels dragged by mules. Mules, all that sort of had to move at night, of course. In the daytime, they could be seen and got shelled.
And did you find that mules were used rather than horses?
Yes, almost all mules. I'm not sure whether the Derbyshire Yeomans had horses. They probably did. But all the transport work was mules, though. At the time I joined up in 1914, I didn't shave, of course. The time I came back, I didn't need to shave. I had an army issue razor. It seemed like a bit of a bully beef tin with a backing to it. It wasn't really a razor. Anyway, I got used to be able to shave without a mirror. And that was all right. But one particular day, on the journey back by train, normally the train would stop about 9 o'clock or 10 in the morning. We had our breakfast served on the train or served at the rail side and so on. But on one occasion we didn't. We went on and on, and we finally stopped sometime later in the morning. And when we did stop, everybody got down, got lathered up, ready to shave. Then after a minute or so, the train started to move. There was a lot of cursing, everybody washing off the alone and so on, couldn't think about it. But I'd learned to shave, I'd say, without a mirror, so I could do it. I walked along the side of the train shaving. Now, the train was a very long one, about half a mile. It took a long time to get up to speed, so I could do that and walk along while the train was getting up speed. Another occasion, too, some of the trucks, or carriages rather, rather primitive, had a lookout at the end of the train where there was a bit of a staircase at the back, and at the top a lookout where a man could sit and look around the countryside. I don't know if it was a wartime move or just to look out for animals crossing the track to give warning. I don't know. Anyway, I thought it'd be a good idea to get up there, so I did on one occasion. It was fine sitting up there, but after an hour or two, I was rather fed up with it and wanted to come down. The train didn't stop, of course, so I got down. I walked along the carriage, a footboard, a thing I'd wanted to do from the time of being a boy, seeing on films and reading books and so on. I walked along the carriage and got into the compartment like that.
You mentioned earlier on that you were just 16 and three quarters when you enlisted. Was that ever queried at all, your extreme youth?
No, lots of people were queried, but I was tall and I got away with it. And I was never queried.
Well, Mr. Banner, Major Banner, rather, thank you very much indeed for sharing your experiences with us. Thank you.
Thank you.